Good morning. I want to welcome everyone to the Second Court of Appeals. We're glad you're here today. The case that we're hearing today is set at 11 o'clock. It's Blankenship versus the State of Texas. I understand everyone is here and ready. Before we begin, I want to introduce the panel to you. To my right is Justice Dana Womack, and to my left is Justice Brian Walker, and I'm Bonnie Sutterth. I'm the Chief Justice of this court. And you guys get to test out our new fancy timer system. It's brand new, so we're going to see if it works today. Before we begin, I'll have the clerk call the case.
The court will now call Thomas Edward Blankenship from the State of Texas, and may it please the court, Mr. Jeff Shearer to argue for the appellant, Mr. Matthew Mills to argue for the appellee.
Okay, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, everyone. May it please the court. My name is Jeff Shearer, and I represent Mr. Blankenship and his appeal of his Class A misdemeanor conviction for violating the Clean Air Act for the offense of illegal outdoor burning. Today, I will be re-urging my argument in my brief and asking the court to reverse and enter a judgment of acquittal for Mr. Blankenship of this offense. I'm not going to go over all three grounds in my oral argument today because I don't think I will have time. I will go over ground one and ground three. So I'll be going over my initial insufficient evidence argument and my policy argument. I believe that the evidence in this case is insufficient to sustain a conviction for two main reasons. One, none of the material Mr. Blankenship is alleged to have burned in this case was seized, inspected, or even examined on the scene at the most rudimentary level. And two, the video evidence in this case directly contradicts the testimony at trial.
Now, the video evidence, are you talking about whether the smoke was gray or black?
That is one of the items, Your Honor, but also there's clear views of the fire in the video at various timestamps, and then there was also photographic evidence submitted of the fire very early from the officer's arrival on the scene that shows the fire and what's in it.
If I may, let me ask you on that point. It sounded from the briefing, and I didn't get a chance to watch any of the video evidence, that there's a discrepancy between what the officers testify as the substances that were burning and what the video appeared to show that was burning. Is that kind of what your point is?
Yes, Your Honor.
And were we in a situation where the fire had burned long enough to where most of the substances had been consumed, or is it really obvious what is being burnt at that particular time?
I think it's pretty clear, Your Honor, when the video is reviewed, that all that can be seen in the fire is wood. And there are materials adjacent to the fire, but on cross-examination, the officers in their testimony said they saw things in the fire. But on cross-examination, as we have the video on screen up in the court, I'm asking Deputy Montemayor directly what is in the fire and what's not, and she doesn't see anything that is alleged to be a Class A misdemeanor item in the fire.
What about the spray paint can?
She was not able to identify a spray paint can in the fire or outside of the fire on cross-examination, Your Honor. And that can be seen on pages 41 and 42 of the trial transcript. And then Mr. Cosgrove also confirms such during his testimony when he's summarizing what he observed on the video and photographic evidence. And he was my defense expert, fire and arson investigator. This is a case of first impression. I think it's an interesting case. It may not sound interesting, but I'm guessing it as it's enticed the curiosity of everyone here today since we are doing an oral argument. Mr. Blankenship was convicted of a Class A misdemeanor of burning waste toxic material. Now, that's not one of the specific items listed as a Class A, so I think we just kind of assume that means chemical waste. For the sake of argument. And the only thing that was brought up in testimony that could have been a chemical waste is this alleged paint can. And I want to highlight the interesting point here, and this is why I think sufficiency of the evidence for the statutory scheme is kind of important. There's not a lot of definitions for these things in the statutory scheme. I don't know if the court necessarily needs to define something, but I think articulating an evidentiary standard would be important for us to interpret and apply this, you know, at the local level, at the trial court level, better for future cases. Deputy Montemayor gave what I think is a frightening definition of a chemical waste during her testimony, and that can be seen on page 34 of the trial transcript. She said a chemical waste is anything not natural to the earth. And I find that somewhat breathtaking because there are a lot of things not natural to the earth that are perfectly legal to burn. And I can give a few examples right here, such as a starter log for a fire, a newspaper, matches. We even use lighter fluid sometimes to start a fire. I brought this example up at trial. Well, I guess all the Boy Scouts are breaking the law every time they have a campfire sometimes. That may not be everything that was used to interpret what a chemical waste might be at the trial level, but I don't think that answers the mail enough to take someone's liberty away.
Counsel, let me ask a question. You've conceded that there's not a lot of definitions within the statute itself. Did you by chance come across any legislative history about what the purview that they envisioned was when the statute was ratified, when it was passed?
I have not looked at the legislative history in quite some time, Your Honor, but I'm just going off kind of my memory because I dug very heavy into some of that stuff for this case. My interpretation of the legislative history is that this was more so intended to prevent large-scale outdoor burning offenses. And I'm talking like almost at a business level, people like incinerating things. Not necessarily for someone in a rural county where it's common to have a fire in your yard type deal. That's my interpretation of it. So I could not find, I don't recall seeing any definitions or inferences as to how they wanted this applied necessarily.
And for clarity's sake, so it sounds like, you know, and this is kind of natural in criminal prosecutions, they were arrested for certain items, then they were charged for probably less items, and then it sounds like once trial actually ensued and took place, there was only one specific item that was actually testified to as being violative of the statute. Is that correct?
They testified to multiple items at trial, and I think the information and complaint were relatively consistent with the testimony. They alleged that there were cans, bottles, treated wood, and the can, they said there was a paint can, but none of those things can be seen in the fire except for some wood. And I want to talk a little bit about that because there are multiple kinds of wood. There's treated wood and there's untreated. There's nothing wrong with burning untreated wood. And if you go to the hardware store, you got to kind of see which one you want to buy. Nothing at trial was brought up to say, other than the smoke color, what type of wood this was alleged to be. And treated wood.
But wasn't there testimony, and I'm not saying I necessarily agree with it, but I know there's lumber, there's plywood, there is pressure-treated wood. No one really used the term pressure-treated wood, but they said that plywood was a type of treated wood because it had glue in it.
That's a great question, Your Honor. And Mr. Cosgrove, in his testimony, articulated that there is both treated and untreated plywood.
Yeah. And we're not talking about OSB versus just sheets of plywood. I think what the chief is referring to is the plywood, by virtue of itself, during the manufacturing process, has glue within it. It's used, not necessarily a treatment, but there's glue.
Well, and that was something that the state brought up in their questioning of the deputies. They had several questions about the type of glue being used, whether or not it was toxic or not to be burned. And I think the interesting question here is, well, you know, there's toxic and non-toxic glue as well, just like there's toxic and non-toxic paint. You know, there
was that developed in the evidence, though? Or are we just supposing here?
Well, these things were discussed in Mr. Cosgrove's testimony. The deputies only talked about it as if it was all toxic or all treated. Or I honestly think Mr. Cosgrove was a great. I'm not going to accuse the deputies of lying. That's not what I'm doing here today. I'm just saying that I think some of what their testimony was about is based on outdated teachings or maybe some flawed assumptions. You know, Mr. Cosgrove is a fire and arson investigator with many qualifications that I don't need to rehash here today. And he just said you can't really tell for certain what type of material has been burned without the most rudimentary inspection. And in a case like this, since nothing was even picked up or examined on the scene, we would really need a lab test to determine what was burned. And he talks about he can't see anything in the fire. And he talks about, you know, his testimony talking about what would need to be done to determine what's burned between pages 53 and 56 of the trial transcript.
Let me stop you real quick right there. As far as Cosgrove saying that he couldn't see certain things in the fire, the state has argued in their brief that the camera and the body cam footage, for example, does not necessarily capture all of the fire, and that there's parts of the fire that potentially is seen on the video, but that's unseen on the video that was actually present there, potentially. Does that ring true to you based on, you know, everything that's happened in the case, everything that you've seen? Does that make sense? Are you telling us that their body cam footage captures all of the fire well?
I believe it does, Your Honor. When it's combined with the photographic evidence, we see the fire at different stages. Deputy Montemayor is the one that puts the fire out. And Mr. Blankenship was arrested within 34 seconds of Sergeant Lane stepping out of his car. And I personally, that offends my sense of justice.
And so the only proof that was presented at trial was the testimony of the officers based on their sight, just their eyeball test that they did within a matter of 30 to 45 seconds.
Yes, Your Honor.
And then they took some photographic evidence to justify what they say they saw.
Yes, Your Honor. And they saw more, obviously, when they put the fire out as well. But that's the gist of it. And so I think the case law supports my argument. I'll go through it very quick because I need to get my policy argument. The Carmucci case says if the video evidence directly contradicts what's presented at trial via testimony, the court has in the past reversed a conviction. In that case, the officer lied about having consent to search the defendant, and the video showed that he in fact asked for consent while he was doing a search and found contraband, and the defendant did not give consent in that case, and so the court reversed. The other two cases involve traffic stops or traffic observations, and the video evidence did not directly contradict the testimony. It merely provided, I would say, context, because in a dash cam video, it's common for a car to not, or for an officer to not necessarily turn it on until a stop occurs, or there's going to be things sometimes that are missed. In this case, we have varying views of the fire from all the totality of the evidence that I think directly contradicts the officer testimony.
Just out of curiosity, was there a motion to suppress filed based on an illegal stop?
I did not do that in this case, Your Honor, because I felt like it would have gone to the merits of the offense alleged. But I did think about it heavily.
That's okay. Go ahead.
And then lastly, you know, because there's no, not a lot of case law on this, the Gaffney case, I think, is a very interesting thought-provoking case. It took place in 2020, and it has a footnote on page 5 of the case, footnote 4, and it happened when hemp was being legalized or being passed by the Texas legislature. And it articulates that in the future, when we have two identical substances, such as marijuana and hemp, on the surface, it doesn't necessarily say a lab test, but we will need something to differentiate hemp from marijuana. And I think that's analogous to the case here. We have a lot of substances that are alleged to be toxic or illegal to burn, and there was not even a rudimentary inspection to differentiate these items. And I think a similar rule saying there that would be required to have sufficient evidence in a legal outdoor burning case would be appropriate. And I have a minute left, so I want you to know my policy argument, which is Texas is moving away from convictions based in junk science. We now have the junk science writ. Obviously, I'm not making a writ argument here today, but the junk science writ allows cases to be revisited when new science comes up showing old science is faulty. And as we all know, junk science is that science that does not follow the scientific method or well-established academic principles. And so here, the testimony about the smoke, not even a rudimentary inspection, this is all junk science.
Don't you concede, though, that this case isn't really about junk science? It's really about what was actually present in the fire and what wasn't present in the fire. I get it. I see where you're going with this, but, you know, it's not that they didn't have an expert come in and testify that these things were toxic, did they? Tell me about that. Tell us.
Well, I'm out of time, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
The officers were both volunteer firefighters. They said that they saw what was in the fire and knew what it was based on the color of the smoke. And I think they made great assumptions about the toxicity and illegality of things. And I also find it interesting, this expertise they claim to have, when none of them were able to define fire when they were asked what that was. And that can be seen on pages 23 and 38 of the trial transcript.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And may it please the court and counsel. Okay, so I just want to pick up on a few of those things that you left off with there. There were two witnesses in trial who were actually there on scene watching and seeing what was in the fire, and those were our two witnesses, Deputies Lane and Montemayor. Both of them had extensive history in firefighting, and Deputy Montemayor had previously been fire marshal of Hood County and with extensive arson investigation skills and so forth. Both of them were standing within feet of the fire, both to observe it when it was burning and to put it out after Mr. Blankenship was arrested. So what they're more or less urging you to do is to say that they didn't see what they testified they saw and to go against all the case law that basically stands for upholding the fact finder's view, the fact finder's conclusion after hearing the facts. And so I just wanted to lay that out there first.
What's the strongest evidence you've got that there was a spray paint can in the fire?
There was testimony. Well, first of all, Your Honor, the spray paint can is not even listed in our information. Okay, so the information says that he intentionally or knowingly burned treated wood, soda cans, and bottles in violation of all these statutes. So that wasn't in the information, but there was testimony from one of the officers about a paint can in the fire.
Counselor, you know, I think about controlled substances when I read this case and look at the briefings and hear the arguments. You know, we have possession of a controlled substance, but and that's illegal, but we don't have consumption of a controlled substance. And the policy behind that is because we can't yank the substance out and test it. Whereas with possession of controlled substance, we have the capacity to be able to test the substance to see if it is, in fact, what is an illegal contraband. We've got a situation here with the statute where something's being consumed, if you will, by a fire. And you know, and the question is whether or not that there's toxicity to it in order to violate the statute. Do you not believe that we should be able to test these substances to determine whether or not they're in fact illegal? You're basically, in essence, telling us that an eyeball test on behalf of some qualified law enforcement is sufficient. And is that your position? That's I guess, really, For me, that's the question I have.
Yes, sir, essentially it is, and let me make an analogy. And I was reading the Controlled Substances Act last night. It's referred to in their brief. It is very scientific, very nerdy, has tons of terms that I cannot pronounce, okay? And so when you have, for instance, they referenced a delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol concentration over 0.3%. That's the distinguishing with the THC marijuana. Okay, well, if you say that must be marijuana, it has to meet that definition, so you have to marry up what you seize and what the lab comes back with. But here, we don't even have a definition of what the TCEQ has deemed chemical waste or treated lumber. So even if you sent it off to a lab and they said it has blah, blah, blah compounds in it, that doesn't even marry up. I mean, it's not the same thing as the Controlled Substances Act. And so my view is they put this in layman's terms for just regular people to read and understand. Don't burn chemical waste, treated lumber. Don't burn, you know, things that could be toxic and bad. And then a layman or a non-scientist juror or judge in this case can then say, yeah, you're not supposed to be burning bottles and soda cans, duh. And so to me, that's how I read it. They didn't go scientific enough to need a scientific lab proof like the Controlled Substances Act.
Sure. And it's statutes there, and you're a prosecutor, and you've got to take it seriously, and I get that.
Just wanted to touch on a few other things and stop me whenever you want. The black smoke thing, I think, was not really an appropriate argument in the appellant's brief. The black smoke simply was a justification or a reason to investigate further. If this whole case was, I saw black smoke, I arrested him, it must have been illegal, we should be thrown out of the courtroom. I mean, that's ridiculous. To me, it's analogous to a seasoned officer sees somebody at 2 in the morning weaving in traffic, and they think, that looks like it might be a DWI. Let's pull the person over. Then you put them through the battery of tests, and then you say, okay, now it's a DWI because I have the other proof. Here, we see black smoke. There's some debate about whether black smoke always means illegal or not. Fine. But he goes and stands right over the fire and looks at it and sees what's in it. Two deputies did.
Well, real quick, let me stop you there. So, I mean, the black smoke, the way I saw it, had two purposes. One, just like you said, it's a justification to make a stop and investigate further.
Right.
Counselor didn't file a motion to suppress because I think the standard for that is subjectivity. And if the officer actually believes it's a violation of the law, and in fact it's not, then they have a legal reason to stop and investigate further, even if they're wrong. But it wasn't it at some point in the trial also relied on to substantiate the notion that, in fact, it might have been a toxic substance that was being burned because there was black smoke. You agree with
yes,
that?
Yes, sir. And I will get back to the same analogy about the DWI. If you're putting on that case that I just kind of gave the example, one of the 10 pieces of information is, yeah, they were weaving when I pulled them over. And then I smelled alcohol. They couldn't stand up straight, couldn't walk a straight line, etc. Even without a breath test or a blood test. Those have been good DWIs for years. So here, even without a lab test, the black smoke is part of the equation, but it's a small part of the equation to us.
And so they came across the fire and they investigated it, and what did they see?
They saw the soda cans, the plywood, the bottles, and I'm glad you brought that up because there's testimony that, and this is just common sense for anybody who's been around a fire, fires change their size over time, they change their shape and direction. There are things that might have been in the fire 5 minutes ago and now they're not. And the deputy testified that there was a charred appearance, a burnt appearance on bottles and cans and so forth, even as they were not actively burning. And so the only common sense takeaway is that they had recently been burning, but they weren't burning when we took a photograph or had a body cam on top of it. These are, again, seasoned firefighters who saw this from just a couple of feet away.
And there's a difference in time. There's the time that the photographic evidence was taken, and then there was the testimony about what they saw when they first walked up.
Right.
And the question, I guess, really that I'm curious about is, what did they actually testify that they saw being consumed by the fire when they walked up to investigate the crime? There was illegal. I don't care about what wasn't.
Right. I believe I'd have to review the record again, which I don't have it all memorized, but there was testimony about the plywood actively burning, and then there was testimony about other things, the bottles and cans being charred, being blackened, which is only going to be caused by a recent fire. And that's my recollection of the testimony from the two eyewitnesses on scene. I'd have to look at the record again for the exact sites, but you'll have that. Anything else on that? I wanted to talk about the video again, and we've kind of touched on this, but the proper law is even in the appellant's brief, and that is that even if video does not corroborate testimony, it is not enough to reverse a decision. So it's only enough to reverse a decision if it contradicts, okay? So there's just to say, okay, we had a photo, and it's kind of from a distance, and it's not a great angle, and it doesn't show everything that they said was in the fire. That is not the same as, oh, they've been contradicted, they must be lying at all, okay? So I want you to think about, is it not corroborating, or is it actually countering or contradicting what they testified to? So I can talk about some of the things that they didn't really raise in their opening, but I don't have a whole lot else, but I'm happy to answer
So more. What is your theory on why bottles and cans are toxic?
Well, you've got aluminum, you've got different chemical components that go into having to process those in a factory to make a bottle or a can that is not, I mean, the general thought behind what the TCEQ has published is more natural vegetation, more natural things that are not going to pollute the air and the earth. That's the whole point of the whole thing. So when you have the chemicals, the aluminum, the other pieces that go into cans and bottles and plywood and glue, I mean, all of that is going to be chemical or toxic.
And real quick, what is your position here today? What substances were being burned that were illegal?
Well, treated wood or plywood, soda cans, bottles.
So treated wood, soda cans, and bottles.
Right.
And the treated wood we're not 100% sure it was treated or untreated. You agree with that? We don't know that.
Well, I don't know if I would totally agree with you. I mean, their testimony from their experts said there has to be glue and plywood to make plywood. So,
and these looked like plywood sheets, not 2x4s or 2x6s.
Well, they've conceded on the plywood. I mean, their brief says, yes, it was plywood, and yes, it was burning.
But we're not talking like OSB particle board. We're talking about normal sheeted plywood,
right?
Correct?
Yes, sir.
And then the bottles, the cans are the like soda cans.
Right.
Soda bottles?
I'm not sure what type of bottle. I'd have to go back and look.
In a paint can, correct?
Right.
Okay.
Well, when we talk about bottles, are we talking about glass bottles or are we talking about plastic bottles?
Glass bottle.
And to that theory, you know, I'm a country guy. I grew up in the country. It was real normal back in the day for people they'd have the big drums. They dump all their trash in there and they burn it all.
Right.
I mean, and trust me, there were bottles in there. There were paint cans in there. That's what people did.
Right.
But TCEQ passes this, gets this passed, and kind of changes that dynamic, correct?
Right.
And do you believe, I mean, counselor's point is that the statute was passed basically with the idea to really police the big dogs, the people in business who were burning things that they shouldn't be burning and whatnot. But obviously your position is that it covers everybody. And the statutory language probably does cover everybody. I doubt they just specified those that get a pecuniary gain out of it or something
right, like
that.
That's exactly right. Yes, there's no distinguishing in that. One other thing that I want to...
Except that there is a domestic waste fire
right.
exception.
Yes.
So wouldn't the bottles and cans and, well, I don't know about the wood, but wouldn't the bottles and cans fall under domestic waste?
Well, there are some exceptions for having a fire. Okay, there's some exceptions just to have a fire, period. We haven't alleged that the fire itself was illegal, just having a fire. We've alleged that the stuff in it was illegal. So they have not articulated that this was for domestic waste, but even if it is for domestic waste, there's still this long list of things that you cannot burn even in domestic waste fire. Electrical insulation, treated lumber, plastics, non-wood construction materials, heavy oils, asphaltic materials, potentially explosive materials, chemical wastes, and items containing natural or synthetic rubber, etc. So those things are never permitted to be burned.
And so the bottles and cans are a chemical waste?
Yes. And I just wanted to...
And that's based on case law? That's based on your position?
Well,
What authority do we have that the cans are chemical waste?
We don't have much case law at all.
Have any authority that tells us that those things should be considered chemical waste?
There's the Ryan case, which was talked about in theirs, but that wasn't really on the facts of a burning case. That was a motion to quash, and it was based on whether the TCEQ had legislative-type authority constitutionally. So we really don't have a whole lot to go off. Another thing I wanted to highlight, let's just say, for instance, that there's some stuff in the statute that says that plywood would be a Class B, but the other things would be an A. That's referenced in the appellant's brief, although they didn't mention it. I just want to remind the court that the final judgment was a 45-day jail sentence, so well under the maximum for even a Class B misdemeanor. So even if you happen to want to reform the judgment, it's still below a Class B. The one last thing I wanted to say, unless you've got some comments, what we're getting at is y'all have an ability to institute a brand new rule that will impact all of Texas today. You have the ability to go out on this limb and say that certain things that have never really been mandated or required in illegal burning cases is now in there. It's now required under the law. And I would ask you not to go out on that limb and to just institute a new rule for the state of Texas for illegal burning cases. Hope that makes sense. Any other questions or comments?
What was the ultimate punishment again?
It was 45 days in the Hood County Jail. I believe it was a $1,500 fine that the defendant laid out in jail. So basically 45 days in jail.
And that's already been served?
No. I think so. I think that has been served. Maybe not. Maybe there was an appeal. I'm not sure. But nevertheless, 45 days, way under a Class B maximum.
And this was a bench trial?
That was a bench trial, yes. Anything else?
Thank you.
I will yield back my time. Thank you.
Good morning again. May it please the court, counsel. I want to touch on some of the things that I think y'all are requesting clarification on with some of your questions. The first thing is the state goes to great lengths to support their witness testimony that the deputies on the scene observed charred materials adjacent to the fire. I believe that this amounts to mere speculation on the parts of their witnesses that could have easily been confirmed by picking something up. Just because an item is blackened does not mean it's been burned. It could merely be dirty. And that's also speculation on my part, but speculation does not support convictions. We need more. That's the American tradition. I also want to talk a little bit about why we have video evidence in cases. You know, as a defense attorney, one of the best tools I have in my toolkit is time. Eyewitness testimony is less reliable over time. That's why we have video evidence, because video evidence shows exactly what happened.
But we're not allowed to weigh that evidence. That's the jury, well, that's the judge's province in this case.
Yes, ma'am, it is. But it is also not uncommon for an appellate court to review the video, and if it directly contradicts, like it did in the Carmucci case, the appellate court has the authority to reverse a judgment if they think it's appropriate.
If it directly contradicts, which is what state's position that the case law is, and you agree with that. It's not that if it doesn't corroborate it, it's if it directly contradicts.
Yes, Your Honor.
I.e., if it's a murder case and somebody's accused of stabbing somebody and you get a video and it's actually somebody else doing the stabbing, that would directly contradict the assertion. But, yeah.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you agree that glass bottles and cans are chemical waste?
No, Your Honor, I don't, because they are specifically listed as a Class C misdemeanor in the Water Code Statute 7.187B. I have a copy of the statute here if the panel would like it. I can provide it. But it's a very confusing statute to read, but the legislature took the time to clearly define what's Class C, a Class B, and a Class A. And you need a prior conviction of burning bottles or cans or plastic for it to be more than a Class C misdemeanor, is my reading of the statute.
And I think when the you have a copy of that with you?
Yes, Your Honor.
Would you leave it with the clerk when we're finished?
Yes, Your Honor. I think when the legislature has clearly defined what falls in a certain level of a statute like that, to me, that means it would be a reach to move something somewhere else. You know, if someone were to argue, for example, that plywood was treated, I would say that it would be a leap to apply that plywood to a Class A misdemeanor, since treated wood is already listed as a Class B. I would like to think the legislature has accounted for that when they passed the law.
What did you think about the state's position? Do you have a counter to it? When they basically, I was talking about the Controlled Substances Act, and he was talking about how those things are specifically defined with you know, with all these different, all the weird words and all the different substances, and so there's a reason to test those items to see if they match up to what's actually delineated within the statute. Do you have a response to that? What's your position?
I obviously think that the citing it, the various possession and drug penal code items to this offense is a good way to analogize and develop this type of statute more within the case law. I think that we need more clarification and definitions. I'm not saying the information per se needs to contain. We argue that this chemical compound and this one is in this thing, but I think that as a state, we can develop better standards, whether it's in rules or whatever, to articulate what would be treated wood. Because I think there were several definitions of treated wood provided at trial.
You know, I think of also DWIs and the fact that, you know, intoxication is something that can be proven up like three different ways. And yeah, the 0.08 standard, but then you also have the not having the normal use of your mental or physical faculties, and how throughout time, you know, sometimes that was proven up through the testimony of officers based on testing, not necessarily scientific testing, but standardized field sobriety tests, things like that. Sometimes, I mean, I guess theoretically a DWI could be proven up without those things if the officer testified to other factors of impairment, intoxication. But obviously you also have the scientific aspect. You have, you know, lab testing, you have the intoxilizer 5000, whatever it is today, and things like that. You know, it's an interesting situation. As you mentioned, we're dealing with something where the question is how do you determine whether or not it was an illegal substance when it's in a fire? Do you believe that it needs to be tested? And if it can't be tested, then a conviction shouldn't be sustained?
Without more, I would say so, yes, Your Honor. And I'm out of time if you...
You can go. I don't mind if you finish. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I think that in a case with these facts, I don't think it's enough. Had the officers even picked something up to examine it, I think this would be a completely different case. But they didn't even do that. And in drug cases, they field test stuff sometimes if they can, or they do a field sobriety test and a DWI. They didn't do any of that here.
Got it. Yep.
Thank you. Gentlemen, we appreciate your argument. It's been helpful to us. Your case has now been submitted, and you can go about your business. Thank you.
Thank you.
All rise. The Honorable Court of Appeals.